Welcome Builders from Lakeland, Florida. This is the Build Your Success Leadership Podcast with your host, Brian Brogen. We're going to empower and equip you to build yourself and then build others. Now, let's build up with your host, Brian Brogen.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Whenever you're listening to this, wherever you're listening to this, we would like to welcome you to the Build Your Success Podcast. Here at the Build Your Success Podcast, we like to build you so you can build others. We do that through our coaching, training, and speaking events, but we also do that through guests we bring to the program. I am excited today to have Kyle Nurminen with us, and we're going to talk about makerspaces, creating opportunities in lower deprived communities and the things he's doing. So let me have him introduce himself to our listeners today. Kyle, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Brian. Yes, my name is Kyle Nurminen. I work for Total Roofing Systems, the metal roof experts in Stuart, Florida. I've been in the commercial roofing industry for going on 20 years now. So you know as well with a construction background that one of the biggest challenges in any industry in construction is building the future workforce. That's what I've been getting involved in. Right now, I've specialized in all types of commercial roofing all around the state. And that's always a struggle for us is, okay, where do we go next? Where do we bring in the next talent? And workforce development is a major key to what we do. Yeah, right now my focus is metal roof systems, commercial wide, you know, commercial all the way throughout the state of Florida and working on some national possibilities as well. Sorry, I started.
Well, thank you, Kyle. And that is the seed for this program is I started mentoring in the high schools to encourage young people to get involved in construction because I barely graduated high school. And I thought, what if I go in and explain to these students how important that education is and actually how it applies to real world? Because that's what I thought was missing when I was in high school. But I learned in that workforce development that I like building people as much as I like building buildings. And so that's why today we coach, train, and speak and try to help our industry. As you alluded to, this workforce development thing is so critical. And if we can help people, you know, understand, hey, you don't have, college is a great option for some people and other people can learn trades and they can have a great career in the construction industry. And so I know you're passionate about that as well.
Yes, Brian. One thing I didn't mention that I probably should is that, you know, this is a leadership podcast. I'm ex-military. I went into the military right out of high school. I didn't know what I was going to do. And I went to Naval Academy, and it doesn't matter what you were studying. It was all about leadership. And we carry that forward to us in our careers today. And that's what we're here to discuss is how do people step up? You know, we all understand and recognize the problem, but how do we step up as leaders in our communities to actually make an impact?
Yeah, Kyle, that is so great. And thank you for your service. And today you're serving others in a different capacity. But when we think about this makerspace and how we can infuse opportunities, and that's what you're talking about, is filling that gap from people that don't have opportunities to showing them how they can have opportunities. So let's talk about makers. First of all, what is a makerspace?
So makerspaces, I actually discovered makerspaces when I was refurbishing some furniture. And I'm really good with wood. I could refurbish just about anything. But when it comes to the steel frame that was broken, I didn't know how to weld. So I was over in the Sarasota, Bradenton area on the west coast of Florida at the time and found a studio, like a makerspace, a $5 fee to go in for the day and use their welding equipment. And somebody was there to teach me how to do it. And I was able to weld my own frame. I was like, oh, this is cool. Then I got into writing some articles and some business development in the area all around Tampa Bay. Found out that these makerspaces were everywhere. They're really cool. They're anything from a carpentry shop, you know, or a sheet metal shop that opened a studio and a extra building in the back of their business and opened it to the public on the weekend, teach people skilled trades. I mean, our business here, we're talking about opening a Saturday morning makerspace, basically for kids to come in or young adults to come in and learn how to use the equipment and be creative with it. Makerspaces are anything from sound studios and graphics studios. If it was a library, it's not necessarily zone light industrial, but they can still convert that space into something constructive for creatives and entrepreneurs in these neighborhoods and in their communities. And a lot of them are in urban areas because that's where space is available and not readily used for business, but it can be allocated towards something that's helpful to the community. And it could be a membership fee. It could be a one-time use fee, like the one I found. They can be a club, a certified actual club as a makerspace, have their own website, have a Facebook page. They're varying. They're all over the place. So nice thing about Tampa Bay was it's a cylindrical community. You know, you got St. Pete, Clearwater, you got Tampa Bay, it's a tech center, and then you have Sarasota, Bradenton, more the manufacturing. So you have this cylindrical community where communication, if you map that, you could find out like, hey, I'm over here, I'm getting creative advice, or I get this idea, but I don't know what kind of makerspace caters to that. We actually map the space around Tampa Bay, so people can find those spaces. So that's what a makerspace is. It's a creative, donated usually, or membership-based space for creatives to go in and dabble and learn.
Sounds amazing. Sounds like some awesome opportunities. You talked about that cylindrical community effort in the and surrounding areas. Give us an example of a success story of some collaboration between maybe a tech school and a makerspace or an individual company. What's the success story with that?
Let me see. So Teresa Willingham is a famous, there's a very possible popular person in the Tampa Bay area. Sorry, it's been many years, so I can't remember the name of her company off top of the hand. She runs a MakerCon in Tampa Bay, and that I did an interview at previously. And she specializes in converting libraries. And now, so they don't lose their funding, they can reallocate the space towards something else because the modern day technology libraries aren't what they used to be. So they'll take a section of the library and convert it into this robotic studio or sound studio or something like that. Some of these kids get 3D printers and they graphically produce something. They create little trinkets, you know, and it could be a little plastic trinket. Okay. But a good idea of how the synergy comes around is Roe Brady Design is over in Bradenton across the bay. Now this person can go over to Clearwater, St. Pete, Clearwater, maybe for a consultant, a small business consultant that actually understands their trinket, what they're trying to do to market, and they'll help them build a business model and a business plan together and how to do this thing. But now they need to create the packaging, the advanced engineering, like where are they going to get the plastics? How are they going to mass produce this thing? That's where Roe Brady Design comes in. So Roe Brady Design will actually say, okay, well, this material you're getting is very expensive. If you buy it in volume from this provider, you know, it can get your cost per product down to this much and your margins will be this much more. We'll help you with the design and the packaging to bring it to market. So that whole synergy, you had a kid that was in a library in Tampa Bay talking to a business consultant that's in Tampa, St. Pete, and then goes over for the advanced engineering design from Roe Brady. Now, Roe Brady takes on a lot of these entrepreneurs' ideas, takes it under their wings as a partner to help get it out into the market. So that's a really good success story. I don't have a key product in mind. That's a one of many examples that I came across in that area while I was working specifically over there.
We hope you're enjoying today's podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Build Consulting Services. Are you ready to reduce workplace conflict, reduce employee turnover, and increase your productivity? If you're ready to put Brian to work for your company, give him a call at 863-800-9658 or email him at brianb@buildcs.net. Now, back to today's episode.
Yeah, Calvin, when I hear you talk about that seed alone, learning how to run 3D printing, it may not be applicable to the little trinket that the young person printed, but man, they can 3D print on many things. Man, there's so much 3D printing going on today to create parts and pieces of products that are no longer available. So a company went out of business and now their parts are no longer available. Now you can 3D print those parts. So a young person learning that skill. In fact, in the ACE Mentor program, some of the students learned to run a CNC routing table that's for wood. But I was like, you can apply this to CNC anything. So when you learn to operate and program a CNC machine, now you can use and apply that in other industries. So again, it's just that seed that you're helping plant. The other thing I would tell you, we kind of laid the foundation of what a makerspace is, what the purpose of it is, and some great success stories. But you also have a model where you invert the economic development model. So I want to hear more, and I know the listeners want to hear more about this, because I think it's a great idea to kind of flip the way we do things in with economic development. And this is your idea, so I want you to speak into it.
Yeah, I love how you keep saying SEED, because we did name the website SEED Region 1. And the reason this came about was employers in the construction industry met with tech educators in the technical industry. How do we attract more younger generation into the skilled trades to help build our future workforces? I was like, you, Mr. Employer, you, Mr. Educator, should be going out to these maker spaces and putting on a little challenge, a little building challenge, you know, put a hot dog stand out there and a blow up house for the kids to bounce around and bring people out of the neighborhood and give them a chance to tinker and play. And then say, hey, did you like doing that? You're this school, and I'll send you, you know, I'll give you a job. And it was a wonderful concept, and we mapped it all out. But what we identified when we did map it out was there was no place for, once a kid created it, had all the resources to create a project and get it to market, but nowhere to create a scalable manufacturing model. So we were missing a collaborative manufacturing space. Like if you watch Shark Tank, you've seen somebody, like a family, turn their whole garage and house into a soap factory, all right? And then they have a scalable model to give Mr. Investor, or they outsource it overseas. But how many times do you go on Shark Tank and they say, well, you want $500,000 for 10%? I mean, I'll give you 10%. You're asking me to do everything. You don't have a scalable manufacturing model. You don't know how you're going to make this thing and mass produce it. So that's what the whole map was missing, was collaborative manufacturing spaces. The great thing about collaborative manufacturing spaces as a nonprofit can actually be profitable. So if you can make it for $1, wholesale it for $2, and retail it for $4, and you make it in a collaborative manufacturing space, those profits that are being made while you're creating the scalable model can go back into funding the facility itself. Not only that, but supporting the surrounding community. Like a lot of these things are in these spaces that are being underutilized, and the intellectual property are all in these urban neighborhoods that we drive by on a daily basis, but don't have the schools that are connecting them to the colleges and the tech schools. They don't know what they're going to do when they graduate from high school. And here's an opportunity for us to place it in their lap and actually use the profits that are made while they're in there, creating a scalable model for an investor to fund the economic development of the surrounding neighborhood while we're creating businesses in our own neighborhoods at the same time. Because our economic development policy right now is to steal everybody else's entrepreneurs. You know, wait for, you know, leave that building rotting on the corner until some major corporation comes in and wipes it out and builds a new high rise to create more minimum wage jobs. All the high end wage jobs end up going, they come from elsewhere and the money goes elsewhere. It doesn't really go, you can revitalize as many river walks and historic hotels as you want, but what contribution are you really making to the economy if you're not building something that's going to build the future of the economy? More minimum wage jobs isn't good.
Wow. So, and as I hear you talk about, I'm reminded you and I had a conversation pre-show to talk about what we're going to talk about. And when you talk about these underutilized spaces, which means they're in a deprived area. Okay. So they're not being rented because they're not being utilized. And then you got this young person that's sitting on those street corners. They have ideas and dreams, but they don't have the way to get there. And you're saying this is a way to get here. This is manufacturing and creating people with technical skills and technical aptitude is a way to increase wages and improve society. Love it. So tell us, you know, again, how that can work on a multi-scale level. So you say, okay, now we've got this idea. We've done it in a makerspace, but now we want to go up into a larger manufacturing facility. And what are you proposing how that works?
Well, you know, that's why it starts in the construction industry and roofing. We have access to all those property investors and managers and, you know, county properties that are old burnout fire stations that are sitting there rotting, not doing anything. So taking an inventory of available properties in around your communities that are just sitting there deprived is a good place to start. Station 2 Innovation Center in Bradenton is a really good example. It was turned into a collaborative collaborative workspace and a business incubator that's still thriving today. I think it's going on 6 years. It was a county property. It was sitting there collecting files. It was a county building, but they created a new county building. So everybody moved out of there and they just started storing files in it. It's sitting there collecting tax, you know, it's not gaining any tax revenue. It's costing taxpayers dollars to support the utilities just to keep it alive and from rotting. So these two business consultants went in there, Spark Growth, moved in and said, hey, give us this building for a year and we'll turn it into this is our model. This is what we want to do with this space. And we'll start funding it. We'll start paying lease. We'll start paying for the utilities and start paying taxes and start generating revenue. After watching that unfold, I realized it's almost like a 2-year model. You really need, if there was a building rotting in the hood and just sitting there, no individual investor wants to put that kind of money into that one building. But if you had somebody who said, okay, well, if you're Mr. Investor, if you're sitting on here, basically let me have it for 2 years. Give me 6 months that once from the point I know I have it to refurbish it, get furniture in there, do I got to fix the roof? I can raise the funds from multiple businesses within the roofing industry that want to get behind and put a little piece together. It's a community effort to refurbish the property, to fill the property. Okay, then I need a 1-year scale to actually show like a scalable model of my own that it actually works and recruit people in there and get people in there, entrepreneurs from these maker spaces, give them a space. Say, hey, all you need is a 10-foot by 10-foot room. Here, you have it. Set up your assembly line. Your goal is to make it wholesale it for $2 and retail it for $4. You can make it in this space. I'm going to keep the wholesale markup. For everything you sell out of here, the $1 to $2 comes to the house to pay for the overhead. So it's self-financing. Okay. If it's on a nonprofit level, the margins that are made while they're there go into an account that gets decided on how to revitalize that surrounding community, whether it's fixing, you know, clearing an empty lot, fixing a porch that's gonna fall on 83-year-old Mr. Jones's head. You know, let's just take his porch off and put a ramp to his house. Let's clean up our properties and create some pride in our neighborhood. Police start coming around, crime starts clearing out. So after that 1 year, now we can say, okay, let's talk about from the 18 to 24 months about now we're in a position where we're actually creating revenue and we're able to start paying some taxes on these property or pay, you know, and pay utilities. And then now we're setting up to actually start paying rent or purchase the property. So Mr. Investor, you just got somebody, you just by giving us this building and sitting there rotting for 2 years, or Mr. County Government that's letting this county building sit in there waiting for somebody else to come in and level it. Why don't we refurbish it instead and make it purposeful? And as a community, we pull together and revitalize it and make it a viable asset that's contributing to creating small businesses in our own region, their own area. So that's the model, really, in a nutshell.
Oh, this is a great idea. I'd love to hear from you. In fact, that's why you're on the episode today. We want to hear about this. I'm inspired by it. In fact, I always hate to see a structure torn down. It's like, man, that you could have made that into a useful space, and to tear it down and start over just always dumbfounds me, the expense associated with that, and how you could repurpose the existing building. So thanks for those ideas. I should have asked you earlier, our signature question, I just dove right into your makerspace. What does leadership and being a leader mean to you?
I wasn't going to call you out on this one, Brian, but I noticed that you didn't ask me that, because every other episode I've listened to yours, you asked us, oh, I got off the hook. But no, who introduced us? Max Story. What's he always say leadership is? It's really a power to influence. That's a part of my own definition of what leadership is. Through everything you and I have discussed, through my experience in the service, leadership starts with followership. So I think leadership is more of a carryover of a followership. And if you're you can't be a good leader unless you're a good follower. So it's that natural inclination, not just to influence, but almost a sense of obligation that a good follower feels to actually teach the next people the lessons that they learned. That's natural leadership. It can be taught. There is a natural aspect to influence. I totally agree with Mac on that. But the groomable part of it is, what do you do with followership? So it's the next generation. The next step of good followership is leadership to me.
Absolutely. Yeah, and thanks for reminding me. Mac Story introduced us. What a great guy. And he knows.
His wife, Kia, tells all of awesome. Us.
If you think you're leading and no one's following, you're just taking a walk. So followership is extremely important. So listen, Cal, thank you for your time on the podcast today. How can our listeners find you? What's the best place to find you on social, and maybe your email if you're willing to share that?
LinkedIn is where I really serve. If you look up Kyle Nermanen on LinkedIn, is my primary networking tool right now. My business is at metalroofexperts.net. You won't find me directly on there. That's more about my company and where we're at, where we're located, and what we do, if you're interested in that. But first and last name, Kyle Nerman at gmail.com is not very hard to forget. So, but on LinkedIn or my private Gmail is always the best way to link. If you have resources in your community, you want to know more about a makerspace and how to find them, you want to kind of get coached through what are the steps of, hey, I have this property in my neighborhood, how do we hold this conversation? I'm happy to help anybody step their way through, no matter where you're at in the country. This is should be a nationwide community effort to build the future of all of our companies. So let's get busy doing it. Happy to help any way I can.
Sounds great, Kyle. Thank you. And for our listeners, I will include that in the show notes. Thanks for listening to the podcast today. I do want to announce we are launching Volume 2 of Voices for Leadership. So excited about that. Our 40 authors from around the world who collaborated on this effort will be launching on November the 17th. So get on Amazon, anywhere you buy books. You can find our book, Voices for Leadership, Volume 2. And we'd also invite you to go to voicesforleadership.com to see more about those authors and maybe join our monthly live call. That would be great. Remember, thanks for listening to the podcast today. Remember to build yourself and then build others.
Want to learn how to build yourself and build your team? Visit www.buildcs.net and learn about Brian's programs, special offers, and more. Build yourself and then build others.